I would note, the Middle Eastern operations of this Third Reich contingent. The CIA Galen mission, described in RFA-22 and headed up by Skorzeny, was to result in the deep introduction and perpetuation of Third Reich elements in Egypt as well as elsewhere in the Middle East. By the way, we took a look at the residual Third Reich elements' role in the ousting of the British from the Middle East, and among other archive shows, rather, Radio Free America number 37, again in the 9/20/92 installment of same, available from archives on audio. Continuing with this footnote in Fascism Today, we're going to take a look at the extent of Third Reich influence in Nasser's Egypt as of May 3rd, 1963. The authors continue, after he came to power, Nasser intensified the search for German experts, and during a debate on Middle East affairs on May 3, 1963, the U.S. Senator from Alaska, Ernest Gruening, G-R-U-E-N-I-N-G, produced a long list of names, including, among others, the following. The former SS Standartenfuhrer, that's a Colonel Baumann, B-A-U-M-A-N-N, known in Egypt as Ali Ben Kader, K-H-A-D-E-R, who had a share in the destruction of the Warsaw Ghetto. Vili Berner, B-E-R-N-E-R, alias Ben Kashir, K-A-S-H-I-R, who had been one of the guards at the Mauthausen concentration camp. Lieutenant Colonel Leopold Gleim, G-L-E-I-M, alias Al-Nasher, N-A-S-H-E-R, who was placed in charge of the United Arab Republic Secret Services. One more time. Lieutenant Colonel Leopold Gleim, alias Al-Nasher, who was placed in charge of the United Arab Republic's Secret Services. Eric Altern, a very important position, by the way. Eric Altern, A-L-T-E-R-N, formerly Gestapo Commissar for Jewish Affairs in Galicia. Heinrich Willermann, W-I-L-L-E-R-M-A-N-N, alias Naim Fahum, F-A-H-U-M, formerly SS Medical Officer at Dachau, who was placed in charge of the medical services in Egyptian concentration camps, together with Hans Eisele, E-I-S-E-L-E, former chief medical officer at Buchenwald. Among the others, Obersturmbannfuhrer Bernard Bender, B-E-N-D-E-R, alias Ben Salem, S-A-L-E-M, who is now the head of Nasser's security police. One more time, Obersturmbannfuhrer Bernard Bender, alias Ben Salem, who is now the head of Nasser's secret police. SS Gruppenfuhrer Alois Mosher, M-O-S-E-R, alias Hassan Yuleiman, Y-U-L-E-I-M-A-N, in charge of the training of Nasser's youth movements. Joachim Daumling, D-A-Umlaut, U-M-L-I-N-G, former head of the Gestapo in Dusseldorf. SS Gruppenführer Bubel, B-U-B-L-E, alias Amman, A-M-M-A-N. Karl Luder, L-U-D-E-R, a former, quote, hierarch, unquote, in the Hitlerjugend. SS General Dürlewanger, who is now an advisor on guerrilla warfare. All of those working for Nasser on May 3rd of 1963, according to Ernst Gruening. Note in particular Bernard Bender, heading up Nasser's security police, and SS Gruppenführer Alois Mosher, heading in charge of training Nasser's youth movement. Indicative, by the way, of the global reach of the post-World War II underground Reich. And again, that'll sound like absolute wacko material, wacko fodder, so to speak. For the uninitiated listener, I refer them to Radio Free America program 322 and the aforementioned, in particular, the aforementioned Radio Free America program 37. There are many Third Reich alumni with a profound influence in the contemporary world who have passed through the Third Reich's Middle East, the Third Reich's post-World War II Middle Eastern operations. And again, note that Spain was the epicenter of the Nazi government in exile, Skorzeny's base of operations. One of the questions I have about Oliver North associate Manzer El-Kassar is whether he might, in fact, be part of the Odessa weapons trafficking network. That network has profound connections to Middle Eastern terrorism, and I think it's a very reasonable question to ask about the Spanish-based operations of Manzer El-Kassar, because he certainly moves in those circles. And we're going to take a look at some of the other evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the BND milieu. We were speaking about the Pan Am 103 insurance investigators report, which implicates directly not only Manzarel Kassar, but the U.S. intelligence off-the-shelf operation that was in control of him, that operation involving, among others, obviously, Oliver North. The Pan Am insurance investigators report implicates that milieu in the bombing of Pan Am 103 as certainly passive accomplices, if not active conspirators. That insurance investigators report has been widely attacked in the West. I personally would not discredit it on that basis. Those sorts of denials are pro forma. More concerning German connections to Pan Am 103, and bear in mind that a BKA operative had actually infiltrated the Middle Eastern terrorist milieu being implicated in the Pan Am 103 bombing. Research credit on the following also goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator. The following is by Tony Patterson, and the following is from the European publication of April 22nd through April 28th of 1994. This is an article by Tony Peterson, Dateline Berlin, and headlined, quote, "Curiosity," unquote, killed the German spy chief. It reads in part as follows. Libya is suspected of trying to cover up the mysterious murder of a top German anti-terrorist agent who was beaten up and killed during a clandestine visit to the country more than a month ago. Sylvian Becker, B-E-C-K-E-R 50, the head of Germany's Foreign Anti-Terrorism Intelligence Service and a North African expert, died in a hospital just over a month after he and his wife were attacked and left severely wounded. He was believed to have been a key figure in the investigation into who carried out the bombing of the Pan Am Boeing 747 over Lockerbie, Scotland in 1988, in which 270 people died. Despite strong international pressure, Libya has refused to release for questioning the two men who were suspected of masterminding the bombing. The Beckers had crossed into Libya from Tunisia in early March in a hired Land Rover, despite a German intelligence service ban on any of its staff visiting the country. On March 8th, the couple were set upon and badly beaten by unknown assailants in the coastal town of Sirte, capital S-I-R-T-E. They were taken to a hospital in Tripoli, where both later died. German foreign ministry officials in Bonn disclosed this week that Libya appeared to be dragging its feet in providing information on the couple's murder. But I do not know why Mr. Becker and his wife were murdered. This adds to the growing mortality list in connection with the investigation into the Pan Am 103 bombing. A key investigator was killed in an auto accident in Scotland. We've covered that death in the past. I do not pretend to hold the explanation for, to have the explanation for the death of Sylvian Becker. One of the possibilities that suggests itself is that perhaps he had either learned information he was not supposed to know, or that perhaps his investigation was running in a direction counter to that preferred by not only his German masters, but also perhaps their counterparts in the United States, including people like Oliver North. Again, however, note the death of Sylvian Becker in Libya. Yet another German connection to the Pan Am 103 investigation, and yet another element of mystery in the cloud of mystery surrounding the investigation into Pan Am 103. Once again, that from the European of April 22nd through April 28th of 1994. Another of the individuals who has passed through the Third Reich Egyptian connection is a former Hitler bodyguard and SS officer named Otto Ernst Rehmer, R-E-M-E-R, who recently had to flee Germany for advocating that the Holocaust did not, in fact, occur. Interestingly enough, although I'm not going to mention that, it's not contained in the following article, Otto Rehmer went to none other than Marbella, Spain. He fled to Spain, again, the site of the Nazi government in exile after World War II, Otto Skorzeny's base of operations. Otto Skorzeny, along with the aforementioned Prince Giusto Valerio Borghese of the 1970 coup attempt fame. Otto Skorzeny, the co-founder of the Internationale Fascista, principal functionary of the Odessa, was reported in Henry Kruger's Great Heroin Coup to virtually control the Spanish intelligence agency DGS single-handedly. I would note that Otto Rehmer fled to Spain and wound up in Marbella. That was Otto, that was not Otto Skorzeny, that was Manzarel Casar's base of operations. Whether there's any significance to that, I can't say, but it is certainly interesting and conceivably significant. Research and translation credit for the following also goes to Dave White, our pan-European translator and researcher. This also from the Spanish daily ABC, only this is from ABC of 5/28/94. A column by Ovidio, it's not stated who Ovidio is here, but this is called, this is Zigzag, a collection of editorials, translated by Dave White from ABC 5/28/94. What explanation can the government give regarding newspaper reports on the presence in Spain of former Nazi official Otto Rehmer? This is the timely question Parliamentary Deputy José María Robles Fraga, F-R-A-G-A, put to Justice Minister Juan Albert Belloc, B-E-L-L-O-C-H. The genocide denier and defender Rehmer, convicted of inciting racial hatred, fled to Spain where he appeared on TVE television repeating his theories together with Gerd Honsik, H-O-N-S-I-K, who distributes anti-Semitic propaganda throughout Europe. Spain, with the passivity of its government, is used as a logistical base for European National Socialism. One more time. Spain, with the passivity of its government, is used as a logistical base for European National Socialism. The inane response of Belloc, who says that he is confined from issuing a search or an arrest warrant, deserves criticism. Well, indeed, I think the presence in Spain of Otto Rehmer is certainly interesting and possibly significant. Beyond that, he wound up in Marbella, the base of operations of Manzarel Casar. We have dealt with Otto Ernst Rehmer on this program before. He is the mentor of one of the top German, quote, neo-Nazi, unquote, leaders. We discussed that in an addendum to Radio Free America 37. And Otto Ernst Rehmer as well is an individual whose political odyssey, so to speak, has taken him from the Third Reich to the Middle East as part of the Third Reich contingent operating in Nasser's Egypt. Those operations obviously were going full bore in the early 1960s. Otto Ernst Rehmer, also an individual whose political operations touch on the United States as well. Of Otto Ernst Rehmer and his numerous connections, we find the following in a book that I've dealt with before. This book is called The New Reich, subtitled Violent Extremism in Unified Germany and Beyond. That is authored by Michael Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, published in hardcover by Pantheon Books of New York and copyrighted 1993. Of Otto Ernst Rehmer and his operations in the Middle East, we find the following. Of his escape after World War II, the author says, by saving himself, Rehmer could help the, quote, seed of ascent, unquote, develop. He and his comrades therefore founded the Socialista Reichspartei, or Socialist Reich Party, in 1949, and 2 years later, in the 1951 regional elections in Lower Saxony, it received a spectacular 11% of the vote. But these impressive National Socialist rumblings were banned as unconstitutional in October of 1952. That same year, he was sentenced to 3 months' imprisonment for slandering the memory of the resistance movement. He called it a, quote, stain on the honor of the German officer corps, unquote. To avoid imprisonment, he went into exile to Egypt, where people then had a little more sympathy for the Nazis, and soon the Middle East became for Rehmer a second home. He was the friend of anyone who was the enemy of Israel, from the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, that's the aforementioned Otto Skorzeny, that's the aforementioned Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haji Amin al-Husseini, a former SS officer, from the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem to Gamal Abdel Nasser, whom he served as security advisor. In Egypt, he also developed into a major arms dealer. In Syria and in Lebanon, he was a welcome companion for Alois Brunner, Adolf Eichmann's assistant, and one of the most sought-after war criminals. Brunner is said to have died in Syria in December of 1992. He was never punished for his crimes. Brunner and Rehmer were, and Rehmer still is, in contact with the Institute for Historical Review in the United States, whose goal is to convince the public that the Nazis' war crimes and mass exterminations are all propaganda lies. More on this organization later. In the 1950s, Raymer visited Germany, but returned to Egypt to expand his weapons business, the Orient Trading Company, a firm based in Damascus. At the start of the 60s, Raymer was again in Germany cultivating business connections for the Middle East. So note, in addition to connections to the Third Reich contingent in the Middle East, involving, among others, Otto Skorzeny and his buddy in Marex, Gerhard Mertens, those connections eventually evolving into the links between people like Manzer El-Kassar and German neo-Nazis such as Ottfried Hepp, formerly of the Sportgruppe Hoffmann. Note again that Otto Ernst Raymer is also connected with the American Institute of Historical Review, quite close to the aforementioned American publication Spotlight, not to be confused with its British opposite number, the Searchlight. And the Institute for Historical Review, something that continues to gather steam here in the United States. One of the things that we looked at a couple of weeks ago in the third installment of the miscellaneous archive show, The Seeds of Nuremberg, concerned a former BND operative and security chief for the ill-fated 1972 Munich Olympics. Obviously, there was a profound incident of, quote, Middle Eastern terrorism, unquote. Elements of Black September, led by Ali Hassan Salameh, a CIA operative by late 1973, and the son of a key aide to Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, that fellow named Hassan Salameh, a Grand Mufti aide, both when the Grand Mufti was an SS officer and in his post-World War II operations. We took a look at Hans Langemann's providing of an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann, the head of Sportgruppe Hoffmann. That is the group to which Abu Abbas and Manzer El-Kassar associate Ottfried Hepp belonged. Ottfried Hepp, like Manzer El-Kassar, part and parcel to the fascist third position milieu. When he had graduated to the Verfassungsschutz, Hans Langemann, former security chief as a BND operative for the 1972 Munich Olympics, later an individual who worked with former Bundeskriminalamt head Hans Kolmar in setting up what was supposed to be a counter-terrorist group which actually appeared to be setting up provocations aimed at the left. We took a look at Hans Langemann's work for the Verfassungsschutz and providing an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann of the Sportgruppe Hoffmann, a group which had profound Middle Eastern operations based in Lebanon. Hans Langemann provided an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann in connection with the Munich Oktoberfest bombing of, obviously, October of 1980. Bearing in mind the connections of the German intelligence milieu and its Third Reich antecedents to such Middle Eastern terrorist incidents as the Olympics massacre, bear in mind the following, also researched and translated for us by Dave White. The following is from the Corriere della Sera of May 20th of 1994. And this concerns an individual with a background in the 1972 Olympics massacre, who is now going to be in charge of security for the Palestinians in the newly, at least from a national security standpoint, autonomous Palestinian terrorists following the Middle Eastern peace accords in which Manzer El-Kassar was being played as a chip by the Spanish authorities. Yesterday, former Black September terrorist Amin al-Hindi, the man who planned the 1972 Olympics massacre, arrived in Gaza. He will be responsible for security in the Palestinian territories. His duties will include disarming the Jewish settlers who live around the synagogue Shalom al Israel on the outskirts of Jericho. Assuming that this account is accurate, that bodes poorly for the Middle Eastern peace. And again, I'm going into some of these Third Reich connections to the Middle East because this is the political milieu with which Oliver North and his element of the national security establishment were operating very, very closely. And note Oliver North's political ascent. It would not surprise me if at some point, not necessarily in 1996, but perhaps in the year 2000 or the year 2004, either Oliver North or someone like him and someone responsible to the very same fascist political milieu that Oliver North is a part of, that Vicio Gelli is a part of, and which appears to be pursuing a strategy here in the United States, not unlike the strategy which was successful or has thus far been successfully realized in Italy. It would not surprise me if Oliver North ultimately is the beneficiary of the death of politics, or someone like him is the beneficiary of the death of politics in the United States. In connection with the pressure being exerted on Bill Clinton, I simply note the following. This in opposition to an addendum to the aforementioned Radio Free America 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. One of the central features of that, my working hypothesis in that massive archive show stretching from July 26th of 1992 through October 18th of that same year was that the United States actually lost World War II, not militarily, but politically and consequently economically. In the spring of 1994, I added an addendum to RFA 37 relying on an article by W.R. Smyser, S-M-Y-S-E-R, of the MIT-based Spring 1994 edition of the Washington Quarterly. That is, again, based at MIT. That article was entitled The Bundesbank, America's Second Central Bank. And as I speak on 6/26/94, the dollar is in very, very serious shape. Attempts to prop up the dollar have not been successful. It continues to fall against the yen and against the D-mark. And there has been speculation that if the dollar continues to fall, this will force the Federal Reserve of the United States, America's first central bank, to raise interest rates in order to attract foreign capital to continue to prop up the dollar. I would note that the American economy, as set forth in, among other sources, that Washington Quarterly article from the spring of 1994, the American dollar is propped up by German capital to a large extent, or to a considerable extent. And it remains to be seen to what the Germans do with their economic leverage and with the Bundesbank's leverage on the American dollar and consequently on the American political situation. Reading now from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, June 24th of 1994. This is a Reuters story, Dateline New York, headlined, Germany offers weak support for U.S. dollar. It reads, the dollar fell against the German mark yesterday after comments by Bundesbank officials raised doubts about whether the German central bank would help rescue the U.S. currency if it were to slump further. The dollar edged up against the yen since foreign exchange markets were convinced that Japan would go along with various initiatives to curb the yen's strength. Japanese exporters have repeatedly expressed concern that a strong yen would reduce their competitiveness. Skipping down, the dollar traded lower against the mark early in the session after Bundesbank President Hans Tietmeyer said the German central bank was, quote, not interested in a lower dollar, unquote. Market players read the remarks as a weak statement of support for the dollar, which had fallen to nine-month lows against the mark and post-World War II lows against the yen. Analysts have made the point that Germany needs a stable currency to attract capital to finance a large budget deficit. A rising mark would help to attract those funds. One more time, analysts have made the point that Germany needs a stable currency to attract foreign capital to finance a large budget deficit. A rising mark would help to attract those funds. And a falling dollar, by the way, will do the same, although it would hurt German exports. And I would note something that we have discussed in the past, in particular in connection with Professor Wilhelm Stauffer of Stauffer Consultants, the strong connections between the fascist elements that remained in Germany and remained in control behind the scenes in Germany after World War II and the Reagan and Bush administrations. Indeed, the Reagan and Bush administrations embodied the fulfillment of rollback or liberation theory. They wound up destroying the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact through economic and political pressure. Germany thus far appears to be the main beneficiary of that, and the Germans are moving rapidly to reconsolidate their, quote, lost territories, unquote, in the East, as advocated by the Vertriebene groups, groups founded by the SS, which actually receive funding from the German government. And indeed, in assessing the pressure on Bill Clinton, in addition to indications of subversion of various aspects of Bill Clinton's administration by elements of our own national security establishment allied with George Bush, Ronald Reagan, Oliver North, and the worldwide political milieu of which people like Manzer El-Kassar, people like Licio Gelli, people like Silvio Berlusconi are a part, I think the German ability to adds lend support to or continued impetus to a weak dollar, forcing the United States Federal Reserve Bank to raise interest rates in order to attract capital to prop up the dollar, and in turn, putting a brake to any prospects of an economic recovery in the United States. I think the German and Bundesbank leverage over the dollar, U.S. interest rates, the American economy, and the political fortunes of Bill Clinton should be very, very seriously considered, because the political milieu, which stands to benefit from the death of politics and the discreditation of the American political establishment and American politicians, is the same political milieu which, again, unites as seemingly disparate elements as Oliver North, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, Manzer Al-Kassar, Silvio Berlusconi, former Waffen-SS officer Licio Gelli, and the strategy, the, quote, democratic rebirth of fascism, of which Silvio Berlusconi's media empire was a key element, and of which the discreditation of Italian politics and politicians was a key element, I think can be seen to be at work here in the United States as I speak in June of 1994. We're going to take one last musical break and then come back with the conclusion of the prepared portion of tonight's program.